Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It has been warm out there and misty and cloudy, and the snow is melting. It would be gloomy weather if you and I were sensitive people, which thank goodness we are not, because we are Minnesotans, so this is nothing to us. We just move on forward and wait for the next thing. Something else will happen. That's what Minnesota weather is all about. It was the second Sunday of Advent last week, and the churches, Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility and Lake Wobegon Lutheran, were beautifully decorated for Christmas trees and velvet sashes and Christmas balls and stars, of course, on top of the trees. Pastor Liz preached on the gospel text, which was from the Gospel of Mark, in which he talks about John the Baptizer, John preaching, prepare the way of the Lord and make his path straight, which Pastor Liz compared to shoveling a sidewalk and getting the edges clean, which was not a good metaphor at all, and she tried to get off that and get onto something else, the message about John the Baptist, who was preaching out in the wilderness, a wild man preaching, prophet of the Lord, and covered in animal skins and eating honey and locusts, and like a crazy person. But people listened to him. Some did and some did not. And as she preached, she looked out at her people, and nobody was listening to her. Nobody. You can tell when you stand up in front. Nobody. They were all looking at the trees and the decorations. She thought about coming down out of the pulpit and just leaving her text up there and coming down and get their attention somehow. But she wasn't sure what she would say if she did. And so she stayed up there. They were thinking about all sorts of different things, the story of John. They were thinking about the Catholics. They were thinking about Sister Arvon, whose Christmas pageant is on Wednesday this week, and she's using dogs instead of sheep this year. She experimented with sheep a few years back, and she got a bad batch, and they just didn't work out. So Mary will be riding in a wagon, and Joseph will pull it. They're not going to use a donkey. They did once years ago. It was a big, big mistake. And the angels are just going to be walking on the ground like everybody else. Putting them on stilts was not a good idea last year. It's not good. And they're thinking about all sorts of things. Marilyn Tollerud was thinking about the call she got the night before Saturday night from her daughter Sharon. It was around midnight, and it woke Marilyn up, and she saw it was Sharon calling her, and she got a vision immediately. There's been a traffic accident. My child is lying wounded in the middle of a highway somewhere. And she picked up the phone, and there were all these voices, and she recognized one of her daughters. It was her daughter's voice and others. She was now in a radio show. It was an accidental phone call, a butt call. And she said, hello, hello, hello. Nobody could hear her. It was a radio show coming to her on the phone. It was a radio show in which young Lutheran women, some of whom sounded as if they'd had something to drink, were sitting around and talking about controlling mothers, and they were speaking freely, not knowing that anybody was listening. It was an amazing, dramatic radio show, and she heard her own daughter, her flesh and blood, say, my mother has no clue. My mother lives in a fantasy world. Her child said that. She hung up. She didn't want to hear anymore. Now she couldn't sleep. She walked around the house. Here was the Christmas tree and the decorations. Here she'd even started to shop for Christmas. Was this the fantasy world that Sharon was referring to? She wasn't sure. didn't have a clue. How could she say that? My gosh. She wasn't going to say anything. And then she thought maybe she would say something, but she didn't know what to say. Until that Sunday, they were washing dishes, she and Sharon. And Marilyn said to her daughter, she said, "I'm tired of Christmas. Next year, I don't want to have any Christmas. Let's go to Guatemala. Let's volunteer at the mission school down there. They need some help. We could go stay for a couple of weeks and paint and do some landscaping." Oh, said Sharon. That was all she said. But Marilyn could feel the impact. It was a moment. It was a moment she had connected somehow. That's what she was thinking about during the sermon. Clint Bunsen, sitting just ahead of her, was thinking about the mysterious footprints that have been found around town, wandering hither and yon. Somebody who's wearing rubber boots, very large boots with a distinctive pattern in the tread, and walking around in the snow and walking right up to people's windows. It's not an alien. It's not an animal. It's maybe one of us. It's spooky. Gary and Leroy, the constables, are cruising the town at night, watching, but they don't see anybody. Earl Meyer was in church on Sunday. He was on crutches. He had had a little mishap. People asked him what had happened. "Well," he said, "it's a long story." It's not that long a story. He went out in his front yard that Saturday afternoon, and because the big spruce tree out in the front yard was weakening, the cold had cracked the trunk, and then the warm weather that came in had done more damage to it. It was an enormous spruce tree on which he had hung lights, blue and green lights, so beautiful. He walked over to it. He was going to stake it up a little bit, and he reached over for the trunk, and he moved it back, and it fell down on top of him. It just fell on top of him. He was pinned underneath it. It was heavy. It was very heavy. He couldn't squeeze out. He finally managed to get his cell phone, and he tried calling the fire department, but cell coverage is very poor up at that end of town, and he couldn't reach anybody. And then his brother-in-law, Ronnie, came by, and Ronnie saw the tree was down, and he came up. Ronnie was about three sheets to the wind, and it was only 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but he came over. He was in no condition to lift that tree at all. So he just kind of rolled it off of Earl, and he scratched his face, and he was bleeding, and he got up, and suddenly he had to pee so badly. And he peed right there on the Christmas tree. The lights and everything, they hissed when it hit them. And then Ronnie had to pee, and he stood there, the two of them peeing together, two men bonding, And Earl didn't want to bond with Ronnie, and so he stepped back, and he stepped into a hole, and he twisted his ankle, and that's how he happened to come to church on crutches. Everybody was thinking about something else. I was thinking about how warm it is getting, and how unseasonable this is, and how wrong it is for Minnesota to be this warm and mild here in the middle of December. I mean, this we depend on winter in Minnesota to stiffen our backbone and give our young people character. People my age, of course, don't need that because we went through bitterly, bitterly cold winters back in the day. I was come from back in the day before parents would ever give kids a ride to school. That just was not heard of back in my day. Chauffeuring was not a part of parenthood. You just took a bus. It didn't matter how cold it was or how many miles it was. And so I never would say to my dad, well, for heaven's sake, not to my mother either. I mean, if I had said, "Would you drive me to school today, Mom?" She would have looked at me and said, "Can you not walk? Have you injured yourself? Do you need to go to a special school for children in wheelchairs? What? So I never did. I never said such a thing. I walked through a blizzard down to a county road, and I stood there freezing cold. I was the last stop on this bus ride, and it would pull up, and it was packed with kids, three in a seat, no room for me. I got on, and I had to sit down. The bus driver yelling at me, "I can't go until you find a seat." And so I had to find a seat that was occupied by the smallest, undernourished, deprived children, the neediest children. I had to fling myself at them as hard as I could and push them in, and they kicked and they bit and they tried to fight me off, but I held on, and then I delivered withering insults and they burst into tears, and then I could ride the rest of the way to school. That's how. And you see, this gives you the ability to withstand disappointments and problems later in life. I think back to a day, it was just a couple of years ago, I was working on a novel, and I was having a great day, and I was just going great guns for about 3 hours straight. I was just pouring it out. It was the best I'd ever written in my life. And then I turned off the computer, and as the screen went blank, I thought to myself, save. Whoa. I booted it back up, and autosave had not worked. It was gone. The best work of my life was gone. I did not sit there and weep, children. I did not. I just set about writing what I could remember of what I had written before. I sat and I wrote for an hour and a half, and I forgot the forgettable stuff, and I typed the best of it, and it came out better than it had been in the first place. This is what you learn from winter. This is what you get out of a Minnesota winter. You learn to bounce back. Don't feel sorry for yourself. Just like John the Baptist, living on locusts and honey out there. He didn't get that stuff from a restaurant. No. He just ate it right off the ground. The guy never graduated from college. God did not need him to go to college. That would have weakened him somehow. Yeah, he was out there wearing those animal skins, and people looked down on him. But you know, if you go through winter and you withstand adversity is what we need, then if God should entrust you with a prophetic word or two, even if it's only and thee, you'll be prepared to go out and put it to people straight the way John the Baptist did. Well, there's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.